Turkey vows retaliation and Russia calls for restraint. On this edition of News Analysis, we're looking at two apparently opposing camps on the Syrian unrest. Will possible plans for a full-scale military intervention give diplomacy a chance?
The already strained relations between Turkey and Syria took a turn for the worse after Damascus shot down a Turkish warplane on Friday. Syria says the plane violated its airspace, but Turkey denies this and says the jet was flying over international waters.
The response to the Turkish jet fighter was anti-aircraft artillery. The maximum range of that machine is 2.5 kilometers. If the fighter jet was hit in international waters, then we would have used missiles and not an AAA anti-aircraft artillery whose range is 2.5 kilometers.
The Turkish Prime Minister is threatening Syria with retaliation.
After this latest incident, we have now passed to a new state. We will never tolerate, nor will we let go unpunished, any security threat created by the Syrian regime on our borders. The rules of engagement of the Turkish armed forces have changed in accordance with the new state. Every military element approaching Turkey from Syrian border and representing a security risk and danger will be assessed as a military threat and will be treated as a military target.
The latest reports say Turkey is beefing up its troops near the Syrian border. But Turkey's rhetoric against Damascus is nothing new. Ankara has on a number of occasions openly called for Syrian President Bashar al-Assad to step down. Syria accuses Turkey of being engaged in a proxy war against Damascus. Ankara has hosted several conferences by groups that are calling for regime change in Syria. Turkey's border with Syria is the main route for weapons shipments smuggled to armed groups fighting the Syrian government. British media reports say the armed opposition also has an office in Istanbul, where defecting Syrian officers are based. And it's believed that many of the operations by the armed groups are planned in Turkey. However, Turkey is not alone. The arms and funds for the anti-Syrian groups are provided by Saudi Arabia and Qatar. The New York Times has also reported that the CIA is helping steer weapons to those groups. The arms have caused havoc in Syria over the past 18 months. The unrest is claiming more and more lives by the day. The Syrian president has begun implementing a package of reforms to end the unrest. Assad has ordered the formation of a new government, and the cabinet members have been sworn in. Damascus is showing no sign of buckling under outside pressure, which it calls a foreign plot. President Assad has promised to deal with what he calls terrorist groups with an iron fist.
Well, joining me now live from Damascus is Mr. Taleb Ibrahim. He's a political analyst. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I'd also like to welcome Natalie Carney, Press TV's correspondent in Istanbul. Natalie, welcome. And I'd also like to welcome our guest in Washington, Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian. My first question to our guest in Damascus, Mr. Ibrahim. First of all, we saw the accusations and the counter-accusations there. Turkey saying that this was intentional, Syria saying that it faced a Turkish warship violating its airspace. What was the Turkish warplane, do you think, doing near or in Syrian airspace?
Of course, the airplane, which was shot down by Syrian air defense artillery, not missiles, it was in a mission over Syrian water and in the Syrian sky. They are trying to make a kind of reconnaissance. And this operation, the reconnaissance operation, is a kind of war or electronic war against another target. Unfortunately, the plane were flying on a very low level over the seawater, and it has been very, very close to the seashore, so the Syrian shot it. I don't think that this is a very serious thing, but now Turkish people are trying to find an occasion to make any military action against Syria. Turkish leadership, they have I think, a very, very bad feeling that they are very strong and they can do anything by their political and by their military power.
Right.
So they may make any mistake, but I think at the end that political resolution should be found to this very small accident between the two countries. The history between two countries reveals that a very sometimes tension is being escalated, but at the end, because neighborhood, another geopolitical considerations, both sides, they have to calm the situation, not to make it escalated more and more.
Right, so let's just look at what Mr. Erdogan, the Turkish Prime Minister, has said about this. And I've put this question to Natalie Carney. Natalie, when Erdogan is saying Ankara is changing its rules of engagement and is ready to retaliate, now these are very strong comments. We have to see whether they're going to be translated into action. At the same time, we're hearing reports of Turkey sending tanks and military equipment, etc., near the Syrian border. So does it look like that things are going to, on the ground, escalate?
Well, just to sort of reiterate or go back to what your previous guest mentioned, he mentioned it as a small incident. Turkey is not seeing it that way because these two pilots are still missing. But as far as the comments of Turkey seeing themselves as a very proud and prestigious country in the region, well, that's for sure. And I think Erdogan certainly had to sort of play that role because that's what the Turkish people wanted to see. They do have a much more prominent role in the region. They see themselves as having a lot more soft power in the region, growing over the last decade, in particular, since the AK Party came into power. So Erdogan was strutting his peacock feathers, so to speak, and standing up there and providing the Turkish people with what they wanted to hear. And that basically is a stronger tone, louder words, and more vocabulary against the situation without trying to escalate it too much, because he does know the ramifications that escalating the situation could cause.
Right. Dr. Tabli, let's have your view on this as well. Some people were saying that this is not about starting a foreign military intervention. That has already started. This could be about taking it to the next level. Now, do you think this is what this warplane issue is all about? Or do you think that, as Natalie was saying, there are observers believing that this is just a war of words?
I think it's a preparation for escalation, and it represents an escalation. The information I have is that this Turkish warplane, which is an F-4 Phantom configured as a reconnaissance aircraft, was repeatedly flying into Syrian airspace, then out over the Mediterranean, then back into Syrian airspace, a kind of game of cat and mouse, with the goal of provoking the Syrian radars to light up, to go into action, so that all of that could be monitored and the nature of the Syrian response could be determined. It is perfectly possible also that it might have been seen as a cruise missile coming from the Mediterranean by the Syrian side. What it shows is that the Syrian air defense is capable, it's on alert, and it will not allow any funny business going on. So I think that would have to be a sobering message to NATO, that if you attempt to attack Syria, you can expect rather heavy losses from the air defense. Now, on the further political ramifications,
right.
Erdogan, I think, has acted with breathtaking irresponsibility and folly. He has gotten himself locked into this confrontation. And where does it lead? It seems to lead towards escalation. There was all this irresponsible talk about Article 5 of NATO, that the entire bloc has to mobilize for Turkey over one aircraft. This is simply foolish. And even inside Turkey, we have the Republican Party of a guy called Kılıçdaroğlu, who calls on the government to stop needless provocations of Syria. In other words, back off. And I think that would be a good message to Erdogan. he is making a fool of himself.
Right. Well, let's look at what role Turkey has been playing from the start of this unrest in Syria up until now. And I put that question to Mr. Ibrahim. Now, Mr. Ibrahim, Turkey has been accused of launching a proxy war with Syria since unrest began. Of course, it's been accused of allowing militants to use its borders. It's been also some British media saying that actually the armed opposition that is acting in Syria has its main offices in Istanbul. So basically, what are the strategic interests involved for Ankara here, and how far is it willing to go when it comes to these interests?
Of course, there's a real proxy war in the Syrian territories, and now all Syrian territories is a battlefield in proxy between Turkey and between Syria, between Israel and between Syria, between Saudi Arabia and between Syria. This is a real truth. It is not a battle for freedom. It is not a battle for democracy. Turkey, what Turkey wants from Syria exactly behind this intervening, they want to see Islamic regime come to power in Syria and Islamic Sunni regime between brackets to come to power in Syria. This will support the position of Islamic parties in Turkey, and this will give Turkey what they call in geopolitics a hinterland to play in it in the Middle East. This will make a real guarantee to Turkey to be very influential and very powerful in the equilibrium of oil, water, and another issue in the Middle East. Turkey now is trying to make a role or to play a role of a super regional power and to say to Washington, we are here, we can keep your interests, etc., etc. So I think now Turkey is going on the wrong side. I now from this point of view, let me highlight something that Turkey isn't able to make any real military action against Syria. They will pay a very, very high price.
Right. And speaking about those two opposing camps, Natalie Carney, we know, of course, that Turkey is now clearly siding with the camp that includes the United States, the UK, France, those members of the UN Security Council, and of course its co-members in NATO. So basically, at a time that we're hearing, for instance, the New York Times saying that Saudi Arabia, Qatar, they're giving funds to the armed opposition and that the CIA is helping the militants there move into Syria, Turkey is getting involved in this side of the story. Why?
Well, I think there is a very good point that your previous guest just made about sort of garnering more control over the region. As I mentioned earlier, they are quite proud of the soft power that they've been able to develop within the region, well, at least since the ruling party, the AK Party, came into play 10 years ago. So being able to facilitate a change, a regime change in Syria, could possibly very be much in the favor of Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the AK Party of Turkey itself, going forward. It could increase its voice, its power in the region. So I think that's one particular element as well. Following through with these steps, helping out Qatar, helping out Saudi Arabia, helping out the United States, just sort of cozies Turkey up to that corner a little bit more, let's say. So betters the relationship with their Western allies. And I think that's one aspect that Turkey wanted to do as far as pulling NATO into the picture, showing Syria that it does have these big boys behind it, and trying to sort of throw again more air into the community, or into the region, I should say, that it does have a very loud and influential voice.
Right. This question now to Dr. Tarpley. With NATO saying, in response to that request by Turkey, that we want to discuss this in a meeting, NATO has come out clearly saying that we support Ankara in this, we think that what Syria has done is unacceptable. But has NATO got a plan, a clear plan, to intervene directly or get involved militarily in Syria yet?
Well, of course, Secretary Panetta of the Pentagon has been quoted in the last couple of weeks saying, of course, we have a plan for that. And General Dempsey has also said the same thing. I would like to point out, if Erdogan wants to be the new regional hegemon, he is doing it in the wrong way, because he's not looking like a powerful leader. He's looking like a puppet of Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. And this is a rather pathetic thing. They're goading him towards a war in which they will not be involved, but he will be. He'll be left holding the bag, and they'll continue to send money and troops. I think The most dangerous thing that Erdogan has done in his speech, and depending on how it was translated, he seems to say, if Syria approaches the Turkish border with military forces, then the Turkish forces will respond with gunfire and so forth. Now, what does that mean? It sounds like he's thinking in terms of a buffer zone or a humanitarian corridor or something like this. That is a recipe, obviously, for a wider conflict. We have to remember, President Putin of Russia has just been in the Middle East, and he laid down once again the Russian opposition, right? A very firm rejection of these military solutions. And there is always that question, if you provoke Russia, what will they do? How will they respond? And this is an area now that with President Putin back in power, it's not so easy to predict what Russia might do. And I'm sure that Turkey is aware that they may be more powerful than Syria, but then to the north of them, there's somebody else who is more powerful still. So this has to play, obviously, a role. The best thing I would say to Erdogan, the Turkish expression is vaziyeti kurturan bahane, that is, find a face-saving solution and butt out of this. It leads nowhere.
Well, you referred to the role of Russia here and with Putin getting actively engaged in this. Mr. Ibrahim, right now we're hearing of an upcoming conference on Syria in Geneva, and that conference has been suggested by Russia itself, and it's been organized and supported by Mr. Kofi Annan. Right now, Russia has been saying that we want neighboring countries of Syria who are directly being affected by the unrest there to be part of this conference, including Iran, for instance. At the same time, the U.S. is objecting to that. They don't want Iran to be part of that process. Why do you think we are seeing this objection? And do you think that the Geneva conference will give or offer something different from the conferences that were held, for instance, like the Friends of Syria meetings or other conferences held internationally?
Of course, that Russia called for a conference in Geneva. This indicates that what is going on in Syria, inside Syria, it is an international and regional war game. They are, as I have said, there's a real war in proxy inside Syria. Iran is very, very influential country, and it's a very important country. No one can ignore Iranian war in all of the Middle East, the center of Asia, and the Caspian Sea Rim, and the Persian Gulf. So if you will find any, or if you will look for any political resolution for any crisis in all of the Middle East, even in the mid of Asia, you must look for Iran, and you must engage Iran. You must bring Iran to the table, and you must make a very big embargo. I think if United States wants or not, Iran has a very strong presence in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, and in Turkey, and in the mid of Asia. I think, and the Russian thought that if we want to stop violence, we must make a balance in making this operation, that the regional forces and international forces who are funding and who are supplying these militant groups inside Syria in weaponry, they must stop this series. And Syrian army should be stopped. This will make a kind of truce, a real truce. On this truce, we can look for international dialogue, and we can look for international conference about Syria to find the resolution about what is happening. Otherwise, the war should be escalated, and we will reach a regional war, not only war between Syria and Turkey, between Syria and Iraq, should be a regional war which might be expanding to a world war.
Yeah, Natalie, now we know that, speaking again of these conferences, Turkey has been hosting various talks, discussions with the Free Syrian Army, with the armed opposition there, giving them venues to discuss the situation, to come to conclusions involving U.S. officials, etc. Do you think that the Geneva conference is being viewed by Turkey as a counterbalance to that?
Well, if it is or if it isn't, it's very important to have that counterbalance. All these countries in the so-called Friends of Syria group talk about democracy, wanting to implement democracy in Syria and having all the voices within Syria be heard, yet they're not including the world population on ideas to take Syria forward and how to address Syria. So it's a bit hypocritical to not include other members. Whether they hold your viewpoint or not, it's essential that all countries take part in how the world is going to address advance on the situation in Syria. Again, it's what they speak about wanting within Syria. So I think that's a very important part. So having this meeting in Geneva, I think, is very essential to get another side of the coin to sort of counterbalance, yes, the so-called Friends of Syria group. But altogether, all these groups need to come together and come and speak of a a unified voice going forward as far as Syria is concerned.
Right, to Washington now. Mr. Tarpey, I'd just like to give you the comments made by the White House spokesman lately about the situation in Syria. He said that, I'm quoting here, high-level defections, fighting closer to Damascus, and the downing of the Turkish jet are all signs that Assad's regime is losing control, and that our view is that transition cannot include Assad. Now, what do you think that means? Would you agree with it? And what does that say about the U.S. stance?
It shows that Obama is every bit as bad as Bush ever was in terms of arrogance and hypocrisy and interfering in the internal affairs of sovereign states. It's also a lot of wishful thinking, I think. We've got to keep this in perspective. Erdogan has essentially turned southern Turkey into a base for al-Qaeda. We have reports of tourists who go to the Iskenderun area and come back saying, I had some pretty rough-looking characters in the hotel room next door. So this is a bad idea. Now, looking forward to this conference, of course, Iran must attend. It's got to be all interested parties. You can't exclude anybody. That would be absolutely unacceptable. It seems to me, though, the missing ingredient is a clear denunciation of what the Obama administration has done. In other words, providing material support to terrorism with these CIA officers in southern Turkey, sending weapons into Syria, and we even have reports, I can't verify them, from Israeli sources that say, once again, British and other special forces from NATO are operating from time to time, at least, on the Syrian side.
Right, Dr. Tarpey, I'd stop you there if I may. I'm really sorry.
MI6.
Yeah, we've run out of time, and I'd just like to give the concluding remarks to Mr. Ibrahim. Quickly, Mr. Ibrahim, if you can, do you think then that a political solution is viable, or is there too much obstacles to that political solution?
Of course, a political solution can be reached if all the parties which have a real influence in what is happening in Syria. If they have a good intentions about Syria, yes, we can find a real political solution for all the problems. Otherwise, we have no alternative from political solution to what is happening in Syria to everything in the Middle East, because the alternative is war, and war, it is not only a small war, it means a very, very dangerous thing which may devastate all the Middle East and may separate very, very widely.
Mr. Talib Ibrahim, political analyst, joining us there live from Damascus. Thank you very much, sir. Big thank you to Natalie Carney, our correspondent in Istanbul, and Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian, with us live from Washington. Thank you so much for staying with us, from me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran. Until our next program, goodbye.